Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. What a special treat we have today. We're recording on April 4th. We'll be publishing later this month. We have invited a remarkable person, Polish journalist, publisher, and entrepreneur Jan Fior, who has, among many other hats and talents that he has, he is an expert in Austrian economics and published a wonderful piece last year at the Mises Institute on the experience of Nigeria with CBDCs, one of the first countries in the world to seriously try to implement CBDCs, getting great case studies on these CBDC efforts around the world is not easy to do. And Jan has done a remarkable job. Before we dive in, Jan, first I want to say thank you, but I also want to give just a quick flavor on what a remarkable background you have. You have extensive experience traveling the world. You've been to over 150 countries around the world. In fact, you've published books on traveling. You have been a publisher publishing both books on economics and travel, but also for books for children. You're an expert in Austrian economics, but the thing I love the most is your entrepreneurial history is extraordinary. As you've traveled, you've done many unbelievable, you know. So I used to work in restaurants. You worked in restaurants. I think you had a cheese factory at one point. So you're someone that I would describe as a wealth builder. You know a tremendous amount about the wealth building process. You worked in the investment industry. Anyway, so you're quite a, you know, I said to somebody, this guy is like a Leonardo da Vinci kind of guy.
So I see you know more about me than myself. How did you get these information?
So we scoured the internet and did a lot of translation. We used DeepL. And of course, you have many books on Amazon. They're in Polish, but of course, with DeepL, we can translate. And as you know, I just told you our wonderful columnist for Food for the Soul is from Poland, and she's constantly educating us about all things Polish. She has an apartment in Warsaw, and you go. I know you go back and forth between Warsaw and Spain. I live, most of the time in the Netherlands, and everybody disappears to Spain for the sun at various points. So anyway,
I stay in Spain in the summertime. For winter, I come back to Poland because Poland is warmer. In Poland is warmer winter because inside in your apartment in Spain, it's very cold.
Yeah.
There's no insulation. It's terrible. So I prefer to stay here in Poland because we have a heating. We have a heating in Poland. But it's okay.
Anyway, so tell us about how you came to be so interested in what had happened in Nigeria with their efforts at implementing a CBDC.
There was a few reasons. Firstly, I have been interested in CBDC, and that was my first interest. Actually, cashless society for a long time, reading Kenneth Rogoff's articles on the danger of $100 bills to society. I felt that smacks of foul play as a cashless society would be the biggest blow to humanity and freedom. And when I discovered from, it was a conference in Singapore conference at the end of 2021, there was a Singapore FinTech Festival and the chairman of the conference, Ms. Georgieva, she declared that Nigeria was selected as the first major country to introduce a CBDC. And it got me interested in it.
We know fintech innovation has already been transformative, and it will continue to be so. Changing the world of finance and making it much more accessible to hundreds of millions of businesses and people who used to be cut off from it. And I'm proud that we, the IMF, are part of this community. I'm here to provide an update on that voyage. I have four main messages. And it is first that countries did set sail. Many are investigating CBDCs and are developing regulation to guide digital money developments. Second, we have not yet reached land. There is so much more space for innovation and so much uncertainty over use cases. Third, this is not the time to turn back. The public sector should keep preparing to deploy CBDCs and related payment platforms in the future. Fourth, these platforms should be designed from the start to facilitate cross-border payments, including with CBDCs.
Later on March 9, I believe, 2022, President Biden issued an executive order on digitalization.
Right.
And in the context of this event, it was confirmed that Georgieva said, Nigeria will be first. But exactly first was Bahama. But the Bahama is a small country, not so interesting like Nigeria.
Nigeria is what, 200 million plus?
220. Yeah. And nobody knows. And the reason, the main reason was I was interested whether, how do they start with this digitalization? What was the most interested for me? I like to know if they are trying to improve banking system or so-called security, or they only start to introduce the cashless society. Second reason, Nigeria is powerful, as you said, 220 million people, and this is one of the greatest, the largest global South countries. And
it's a major oil producer. Major.
Major oil producer is just on a paper because there is a shortage of oil, a shortage of gasoline.
Really?
Yes. 70% of the oil that they are taking from ground, it's been stolen.
Right.
It's stolen. So there is a shortage of, in Nigeria, the official production is only 30% of what they dig out, because 70% is stolen. The pipes are broken, so the thieves are stealing. But that's another problem. And coming back to your question, when I discover that the Global South country has been selected as a first one, so I thought, why that happened? Why Nigeria was chosen? It was in very important piece of information for me, because I thought that it's not easy I thought that they start with some well-established country like Netherlands or maybe even Canada, but they started with a country from Global South, and nobody knew. No, I couldn't understand why this. Why they test procedure in such a strange place.
Right, because a large percent of the population is not online. Isn't that?
Yes, that's another problem. We will talk about it later. And I didn't know if this is who selected, why they selected, why. Of course, we know that all CBDC and cashless society affairs are made by World Economic Forum, are by Bank of International Settlement, by Deep State generally. But why they took Nigeria? Nobody knew. Finally, Another reason why I was interested in Nigeria is was the fact that I have a close friend of mine. He lives in Nigeria since 1980s. He's a Polish guy. He lives over 40 years in Nigeria, and we frequently talk on internet. He instructed me about country, and whenever we met, he told me and it's something new about Nigeria. And the question to answer the question why, because I try to understand why they launch CBDC in Nigeria. I frankly don't know. Probably it was because Nigeria was very close. It's country within U.S. and G7 circle of influence. It would be easier to force them into doing so. The country is traditionally prone to corruption. All the more reasons for the authorities to agree to this distinction. There is no secret of the fact that almost 60% of population, over 120, 130 million people, they have no access to internet. I took it as a good news, indicating the deep state is unprofessional. It's using unprofessional approach to this serious attack on freedom. As the state usually has unprofessional dealing
so
with.
So let me interrupt and ask a question. It seems to me that I would want to start in a place where there's not a lot of feedback to the G7 nations by informal mechanisms. That's number one. And that's why I so appreciate the work that you've done here. But the second thing is, if you roll this out in Nigeria and you see all the different coping strategies that people use to avoid it and stay off of it, it's a wealth of information that will be helpful to you when you hit the G7 countries. Because I want to go through the pushback that they got in Nigeria, but I think they learned a tremendous amount about the pushback that they're going to use in other places. So I can see the logic for wanting to do it in Nigeria. And of course, part of it is the same as with India. You're trying to force everybody in Nigeria to get on the internet systems.
Okay, but let's yes, I agree with you because Nigeria was one of the most of global South countries now are for the Russian side, for the wrong side, for G7, different, right. Opposite than G7. So among larger countries which are on the side of G7, Nigeria is I think the largest. Maybe Indonesia, but Indonesia is undecided. Maybe Argentina, but Argentina is smaller. So Nigeria was fit perfectly to this debutant country. So can we? Maybe
yeah, let's walk through the timeline of what happened, because one of the things I find amazing is, as you point out in your article, they had a referendum and essentially the entire population rejected CBDCs, but they went ahead with it anyway.
That was my mistake with this referendum, because I found this information on one of the African website. I think it was Naked Capitalism, but it was not true. It was not confirmed.
I
apologize for this. But there was definitely prevailing 90% of more than 90% of the population didn't like this idea to start digitalization. And so formally, there was no referendum, but okay. Everybody knew that the country is not ready for digitalization, and the people are not ready even for using internet. So obviously, it was not the right candidacy. Okay, so coming back to the timeline, everything started on October 25th. I have here some notes. I'm gonna read it. On October 25th, 2022, then President of Nigeria Muhammadu Buhari from Fulani tribe issued a decree that despite the opposition of majority of the nation to the currency digitalization, the financial revolutions would still take place. 2 months later, December 2022, the government in Abuja launched a total attack on cash. The situation resembles events from 2016 in India, when the government demonetized the highest denominated banknotes, 1,500 rupees. The governor or Central Bank of Nigeria, CBN, announced that by the end of January 2023, later extended to February 10, Nigeria would fully transition from physical cash, Naira, that was their currency was Naira, to e-Naira, the central bank's digital currency.
Let me just ask you, so if people had cash, did they have to convert it?
Yes, people were required to transfer their traditional holdings in cash to the CBN, to central bank, which would service them under the new monetary regime. The executive order was carried out by then governor of Central Bank, Godwin Emefiele, powerful politician from Ibo tribe, a general of army and the only Christian in the country's mostly Islamic ruling elite.
So if I had cash but no internet access, how was I supposed to then use the new money at the CBN? How was I supposed to access and use it?
The population with the money, with the cash, was like 35 million people, like maybe one six or less. 15-16% of the population. It's a middle class. It's estimated between 35 and 40 million people. And when February 10, the day of inauguration, arrived, about 80% of the 7.2 billion dollars, equivalent of dollars, previously in private hands, ended up in digital accounts and as a CBDC. The poorer segment of the population still did not, over half of the people, still did not have a bank account. Half did not have a bank account, and the rest have no internet access. Despite assurances from CBN that physical cash would not be eliminated until CBDC was fully operational, old Naira, existing cash, has been abolished. And half of the nation, more than half, was left with old, worthless banknotes. Commuters to and from people that they told me that they could not come back home because they could not, they had no cash to pay for their return ticket.
Do you
home.
Have any idea what that total amount of cash still outstanding was that was deemed worthless?
Total was 9 million. Nine billion. And 7.2 billion was transferred delivered to the central bank.
Okay.
Many small businesses, a significant part of the economy in Nigeria, relied mostly on cash payments, were lost because their customers had no money to pay. It is easy to understand why violent riots erupted in the country a few days later, February 16, 6 days after the inauguration. And people got killed, deprived of their entire wealth. Desperate and hungry people took to the streets demanding reinstatement of validity of old currency, old paper currency.
Nigeria's got a Naira crisis, and it doesn't seem to be easing. For weeks ahead of a major national election, Africa's biggest economy hasn't had enough cash for its citizens. It all started back in October when the central bank announced to demonetize the 200, 500, and 1,000 Naira notes in what they say was a chance to cut corruption, reduce excess cash, and rein in inflation. But the move spiraled into chaos. For starters, a deadline to exchange old notes in for legal tender led to long queues at ATMs and banks nationwide, oftentimes in the middle of the night and up to 7 hours long. Business runs mainly on cash in Nigeria's large informal sector, as does most of the economy. Not just that, only 60% of households, according to some estimates, have access to a bank account, and that number dips to 40% in rural places. So the shortage is grinding normally bustling shopping centers to a halt. And even getting to the front of the line isn't a feat in and of itself. Residents are only allowed to withdraw a maximum of 20,000 Naira or $43 at a time. And even the machines meant to dispense these notes are running dry. It didn't need to be this chaotic. Other countries like India, the UK, and Somalia have all carried out similar demonetization schemes with varying degrees of success. Nigeria's crisis, though, comes as the Naira weakens against the dollar just before presidential elections and with black market currency rampant compared to the bank-controlled market. And Nigeria's largely unbanked population could face even more hardship without any sharp increase in the supply of the new notes, despite the extension of the deadline.
The same times, rumors circulated that the Buhari's government had issued new currency, new paper currency, new Naira. So we have an old currency abolished, the new issued, and the new was allegedly for temporary use, transition period. And from the end of January 23, because it started like I said, this end of December they starting transferring money into Naira, into e-Naira. Everything operated smoothly, but it was limited to the middle class, 35 million people in Nigeria. The vast majority of Nigerians who use cash in their daily lives ran around fruitlessly, searching to exchange the old money for anything they could eat. The rumor that Buhari's government issued new currency was confirmed last days of January 23. The problem was that the new cash was nowhere to be found. Even few months later, when the central bank has withdrawn from the experiment, almost 3.5 months later, the supply of new transitional Naira not even reach 10% of the entire Nigerian currency supply. There was a surprise for everybody, because suddenly we have a two paper currency, one abolished, which is worthless, and a new one which is not available. And most of people, like 80%, have no account, banking account or internet or both. There was no possibility of mass exchanging the old invalidated Naira for anything else, even for the new one. Despite the events of February 16, when the people got killed, the government acknowledged that the newly issued currency intended to meet the demands of protesters and will be restored soon. Even brightest Nigerians were unable to understand why the government planned the elimination of the existing cash, especially that 2 weeks from the February 10, from the inauguration date, has been general election scheduled for February 24. So 2 weeks before election, they abolished. More than 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they abolished currency. So the government risk obvious defeat in this chaos. Nobody expected the government can do such a thing, but they didn't care. The new cash was issued, but not available for Republic, because it was a guarantee of electoral victory. It was intended to be distributed to the poor people, but significant majority of poor people, so they would know who to vote for. As predicted, nothing happened for the government, because government was protected by this new currency. Old currency didn't work. New currency worked for the government.
So it's kind of clever. You give the new currency to the people that you can depend on to vote for you, and you cut off the cash to the people who are not going to vote for you.
Yes, but there was enough money to pay for those whose vote prevailed in election, and the right. Existing government and the candidate, because the candidate, the main candidate for the president, was also member of the governing country, the governing party. Mm-hmm. But they didn't care about this. It's important to know that we are talking about country that was already struggling with a currency crisis, soaring inflation, fuel shortages, despite being Africa's largest oil producer, where severe lack of money and never-ending queues at ATMs have been prevalent for years. Even dollars were scarce in Nigeria with the high black market premiums. For the three and a half months from the day of election from the February 10 until May, someday end of May, which is date of inauguration for the presidency, people have no money. Nigerian had to function more or less without currency.
And what were the coping strategies? Because, you know, the indication that what I interpreted from your article is, you know, people used their social networks and their families to really cope and barter and function essentially without government cash.
Let me say a few words on the president, on an election. February 24th. Election won Bola Ahmed Tinubu from the Yoruba tribe, former civilian governor of Lagos State, from governing country. Very rich man, even on the U.S. standard. However, the situation of uncertainty and danger persisted for people for 108 days, exactly before election, until the inauguration of the new presidency. But nothing happened. Nothing really, no tragedy occurred. Why, how this Nigerian survived this 3.5 months without money, savings, without, most of them, they did not have a savings, no reserves, no help from the state. And that's a puzzle, but this puzzle is easy to solve, because Nigerian, unless, unlike most residents of G7 countries, don't believe a word their politicians and government representatives say. Feeling deceived once again, when it became clear that neither old nor new Naira worked, new currency, people took to the streets. And then, 6 or 7 people died, and response to refusal to accept their old cash invalidated. People without banking account, without cash, without savings, resorted to traditional methods, barter and trade credit. For example, matchsticks holders exchange them for yams with the farmers. Soap producers traded for fuel. small business owners extend their longer credits to their contractors. Teachers and cleaners from local schools sought help, mainly food, from the families of their students. The natural lack of faith in statism, something that wealthy German or Canadian citizen might consider imprudent, has prevented an outcome similar to the 2022 convoy of Canadian truck drivers hurt by a government in Ottawa. It is, after all, because of their country's bad monetary policy, the German pensioners are experiencing hardship in life from the government, from their government, and they seem not to understand it. There's a no in the West, there is a no connection between feeling bad and the government, how the government and government fault that created your bad feeling. According to Nigerians, weak small state might not help them, but at least the VAT, value-added tax in Nigeria, is at most 5%. Tax collection does not exceed 25% on tax revenue. Healthcare may be deficient, but people have more trust in their shamans than in the board and big pharma corrupted doctors. Speeding fines are rare due to lack of policemen, but there is no labor inspections and no one forces anyone to take an experimental vaccine as well. Tribal groups, rural authorities, and neighbors provided assistance. Families, which in African life are the ultimate support, helped. Self-help, self-reliance was the basis of survival for the Nigerians, deprived of any official assistance. I'm telling this because soon, much more statist nations could undergo similar CBDC digitalization. And what happened next? On May 29, the day of inauguration, approximately 108 days from the cash elimination, President Tinubu restored the validity of old currency. He waited he was elected president, and he waited 108 days, almost 3.5 months, until he said, okay, now all Naira is working. Old Naira is good, new Naira is good, and e-Naira as well. What led Tinubu to make such a gesture? What forced to do? So I thought that maybe supervisors, those overseeing like International Monetary Fund, Fed, Bank of England, maybe they did something to make him to release the tension and finish the chaos. No, there was nobody nobody cared about those people. Government, leading party, governing party, new president, old president, everybody knew that 120 million people are on a cusp of death, but they didn't care. Nobody cared. Rumors after election confirmed that the ruling party had hidden new Naira until, what is what I said before, they hidden new Naira in order to bribe voters. And they achieved their goal, and because they won. President Bola Tinubu put an end to experiment and stuck. He said no more CBDC. He invalidated CBDC. He ordered an investigation into Central Bank of Nigeria, resulting on June 10, which is a few days after election, in unprecedented detention of the former governor, chairman of the Central Bank, Godwin Emefiele. In late July, which is 3 weeks later, the court released him, the governor of Central Bank. He released him from custody, but the security services, a few days later, rearrested him. And he stayed in custody until end of December 2023.
So let me ask you a question. If they had If the head of the central bank could help them engineer a winning of the election, why would they arrest him?
Because they needed some scapegoat.
Okay.
So they made him a scapegoat. First of all, he was the presiding authority, the institution that was running this CBDC was officially central bank. Of course, the president was managing, president was overseeing this, and some foreign institution, like I said, International Monetary Funds, and allegedly Bank of England. But
so it's opposite. You know, in the United States, it's opposite. The central bankers use the president as the scapegoat or shoot him. So,
yeah, but I don't know how it's in the United States, because in case of CBDC, who is going to manage this transition? Jeremy Powell or President Biden or the president?
Right.
I don't know. Probably Fed. So, as I said, nobody cared about those people. Nobody cared about CBDC. Finally, chaos ended. Who benefited? I ask myself, Ki Bono, because hiding New Naira from masses, as it later turned out, served to prepare the cash box to pay the voters. So the government had interest in hiding new Naira. Custom being popular in Nigeria to pay to the voters. The ruling party did not lose power. The president was from ruling party. So the president was president and enriched himself. Because he was already one of the richest men in Africa, the Tinubu, the new president of Nigeria. He was even, they claimed that he was even biggest oligarch than Sese Seko Mobutu, ex-dictator of Zaire. But so we have a winners, just the winners. Society, as entire society, generally they survive, so they are winning. Nobody died because of hunger or any related disease. So everything was no victims. Why didn't these the question was, why didn't these, because for European guy or from American observers, it was evident that the people can die, may die. Why didn't the overseers from World Economic Forum or from Bank of International Settlements, why they did not ask anyone in Nigeria to release to give a chance to those over 100 million people living? It was almost act of genocide.
Right.
But nobody, even European, even Western standards did not help. So I see some contradiction, because from one side, they count on Nigeria as a testing field for CBDC, and the other side, they ignore it. They completely disregard them.
It was extraordinary when India tried to demonetize the cash. You would get two reports. So you would get reports through the tech industry that it was wildly successful, and tech was being adopted, and fintech would do very well in India. You would get reports from people on the ground dealing with the populations who were suffering. And the brutality of what was happening was unbelievable, and the pain and suffering was unbelievable. And you would get these two completely different, as though these groups were living in parallel universes. And
I'm going to.
And what you could see is the tech folks couldn't care less about how many people they killed or destroyed in the process of getting the conversion to happen.
Probably there were some victims. We don't know about them, but not it is not published anywhere. But I know right. that many people are dying every day, are dying in Nigeria, regardless of election, regardless of CBDC. They are dying because of hunger, because of
poverty.
Poverty. Yeah.
Right.
Such a theoretically very, very rich country. They in the best time, they digged 5 million or 6 million barrels of oil a day. Now the country needs 3 million barrels, and they produce less than 2 million. There was one story I was told about a private refinery, because there's a shortage of fuel in Nigeria, because they have the oil, but they don't have the refineries. They had three refineries, but they don't work. They destroyed them. So there is a
was
private
that part of
refinery.
Was that part of was destroying the refineries part of the CBDC shock?
No. It was before.
No,
but
before.
Because this country is it's a full of contradiction and it's almost dying since probably 34 years ago. But coming back to this private refinery is buying oil from the thieves who are stealing from the pipelines, broken pipelines. So the thieves are stealing oil, selling to Nigerian but private, not the government owned refinery, and this refinery is selling the gasoline or diesel fuel to some other country, and the governmental group, the chosen people, they have a right to import that gasoline, that fuel to Nigeria, back to Nigeria. That's how it works, how the oil industry works.
So let me ask you something else about that 3.5 months. We have watched a pattern around the world, particularly after the Soviet Union fell. We saw this in Russia, you know, from 90, 91, 92. We saw it in Eastern Europe. We saw it in Latin America. We've even seen it in areas of America, and I'm worried more will happen in America, where you do a shock through cutting off the currency liquidity. So the banks are closed, or the banks are empty, the money's stolen, or you can't transact. In Greece, you know, they shut down transactions for months. So the common currency is shut down and liquidity destroyed for some reason. And then predators move in and pick up lots of land and real estate cheap. Now, I don't know if that happened in Nigeria.
No. In Nigeria, nobody is buying anything because nobody cares. Because it's worthless. Economy is worthless. The land is worthless. Country is worthless. It's no reason to invest. The friend of mine, he owns a pretty big, like 20, 30 million dollars per year, a construction business, construction company. And he has full equipment, a land. Now he would like to, because it's for white people, especially for foreign people, especially for white people. Now it's the danger because of this poverty, because of this chaos. So they also everybody search for another scapegoat, and the good scapegoat is 150,000 white people living in Nigeria. Now the government established it's not a penalty, it's not a fine, it's some kind of fee for being foreigner living in Nigeria. You have to pay $15,000 a person. So because his family is like four people, so he must spend $60,000 to stay in living in Nigeria. So he decided to go out, but he cannot sell anything. He has a very modern equipment. He has a very well located land, but nobody is buying because there is the only successful economic activity is a stealing. But right. we come to this point, okay?
Okay.
So I try to come back to this Emefiele, the governor of Central Bank. He was in jail, then he was released, and then they presented him with the charges of embezzling some quadrillions of nairas, and they sent the case to court, but nobody knows which court. Then after all, he spilled everything he had to spill, and that for this reason can be expected the case probably dry up. Now I have a news from 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago that he's free. He paid some decent bond, and he submitted his passport, but he's free man. Okay, but coming back to Kibono, yeah, who benefited on this situation. It appears that the case of CBDC has been suspended, so even Davos did not benefit. This does not seem strange in view of the country's problem. As I started, the high inflation, threat of crime, very dangerous. You have to, your kids going to school, you have to have a convoy, police and private police too, and you have to pay them, all of them, because they don't make money, because it's not, the government has no money, it's shortage of money. The larger producer, oil producer like Shell, British Petroleum, and others, maybe I cited wrong names, but one of those largest oil producers, they left the country. They don't want to stay in Nigeria. They are afraid. The people are afraid to live there. Moreover, the Chinese, because I try to position what countries, who is interested in Nigeria? Privately, nobody, maybe some government, but even governments are not, even big, large, very large corporations are not interested. Maybe Chinese, but the Chinese, they stay in the villages and they are digging, they are small, thousands of small Chinese enterprises digging in the ground for some metals, for all gold, silver, copper, and at the same time for searching for oil. But why? Because it's plenty of oil, but it's not exploited. It's not working. So it's, moreover, Islamist operation. Stoppage recently, last 6-7 months, that the oil production stopped. From time to time, there are some signs of optimism, statements from the government that the government is going to make order, come back to CBDC, and start from scratch. But nobody cares. Nobody trusts this. This is just a delusion. Another reason is that president. I tell you how was what happened with this new naira from the closer perspective. President put up a huge amount of money to bribe the right people to win election in Africa. The reason for choosing. That's what my friend told me. For reason for choosing political career is not desire to serve the people or even desire to, for a glorious passage to history, but a desire to hoard or assimilate as many public monies as possible, many pennies, nairas, dollars as possible. In the case of our hero, which was new president, he invested zillions, like I said, in winning office. So he has to get his money back and also make something on top of it. The government is having some income, but as I said, only 25% of taxable income in Nigeria is taxable. So only 25% taxable income it pays taxes. 75% does not pay. So it's a shortage.
It's inconceivable to me that his backers and people who were the insiders on this game, you know, who had high liquidity and access to lots of currency during this process, couldn't have taken enormous advantage of it.
That was 50 years ago. In Nigeria, something started, and people, they started. My friend, he came to Nigeria because he read in Financial Times or some other newspaper that there is a huge chance to make money, to create something, to create a wealth in Nigeria. But if 50 years ago, it started nicely, like everything, but then they started stealing, and destroyed everything. So
you're describing a society where corruption has destroyed the ability to accumulate or preserve wealth. It's gone to a level of dysfunction that puts the entire society in a downward spiral.
Yeah, but from the other side, Nigerians are very smart people. When you hear on internet or elsewhere, there's a plenty of those white-collar crimes created by or made by Nigerians. They are smart people. They are very entrepreneurial. They can do whatever they want. But in this country, it's impossible to do anything. Everything is procrastinated. Unfinished investments, abandoned building, promises unfulfilled promises. That's a one stream of activity in Nigeria. So the people, they don't believe in anything that anything can finish nicely, happily for them. And it's similar because we mentioned about the India and what the government did in India by demonetizing banknotes. But India was a different path. A government in India was not about CBDC, but about abolition of cash.
Right.
And stealing people's money under pretense that they search for tax evaders. So this is something similar, but it's more
right.
mature.
But so India, you know, we saw this with the G20 meeting in September. India is on the lead in terms of leading the G20 on getting all countries adopted into the BIS infrastructure of digital ID and BIS. And India, to even get close, has to get much more of the financial system digital. So
yes,
I think it was just a step towards that.
But in this case, we have to focus on CBDC, because CBDC, it's a one of the most dangerous activity in the history of this planet, because it's not about CBDC. It's about cashless society. As in Sweden, right. everywhere, when they start anything with the what the CBDC, if they say we digitalize the currency because it will be easier for you. Many people are happy. I'm happy with a credit card or debit card, paying for everything with the plastic. It's very convenient. But they don't do it for convenience. They do even in Sweden, even in Norway, where formerly cash has not been abolished, but it is very difficult to find the cash and use it.
Right.
And they try to steal money from people. The affair of India was one of those cases.
So one of the things you see in the U.S., the Fed has been slow walking CBDC. Even recently, the chairman of Powell said in testimony, "We're not even remotely close," which is not true because they're putting out, you know, the Richmond Fed, the San Francisco Fed are putting out scopes of work to hire CBDC developers. So they're talking out of both sides of their mouth.
I'm going to bring up one other topic I don't know that's been brought up today, and that's central bank digital currency. I think from a lot of my friends out there, I think there's some, well, I know there's some confusion. I mean, I'm easy to confuse, but there are a lot of people that get confused about what is meant by the administration's, you know, admonition to continue researching, experimenting, looking at some sort of central bank digital currency. I think people back home look at that and go, oh my gosh, you know, they're going to control this now. And could you maybe just differentiate a little bit what people think of in terms of a Bitcoin or their held digital currencies versus what a central bank digital currency, who in my view should emulate cash, right? It still should be about the dollar, not about some different kind of currency. Could you just sort of help people back home better understand why they shouldn't be quite so frightened?
First of all, I want to say that we're nowhere near recommending or let alone adopting a central bank digital currency in any form. But the idea is that as technology has evolved, money has become digital. So, but the government doesn't issue digital money. It's digital. If you look at your bank account, people don't hold those physical dollars. They're digital. So the thought was that the government could create a digital form of money that people could then transfer among themselves. Now, of course, that raises a concern that if that were a government account, that the government would see all your transactions, and that's just something we would not stand for or do or propose here in the United States. That is how it works in China, for example. But that's not if we were ever to do something like this, and we're a very long way from even thinking about it. We would do this through the banking system. The last thing we would want, the Federal Reserve would want, would be to have individual accounts for all Americans or any Americans for that matter. Only banks have accounts at the Fed, and that's the way we're going to keep it. So it's just really a question of following technology as it evolves and in a way that serves the public better. People don't need to worry about a central bank digital currency. Nothing like that is remotely close to happening anytime soon.
But in the meantime, Jan, the aggression with which they're trying to consolidate control of the food system and to stop the Second Amendment that allows us to own firearms, the intensity, it's a war to get control of the food system and to bring in the guns. And I think it's because they know, you know, and also to end cash. They need to control the food, they need to get in the guns, and they need to, you know, take cash down to the minimum. And in those three areas, it's a war. And I think part of the reason they're so intense in that war is, you know, they've looked at what happened in India and they've looked at what happened in Nigeria, and they know those are critical strategic points if they want to get away with this.
Yeah, because this is all about money, all about greed. And even those oligarchs, the billionaires, they are stupid, idiot, thinking that they can have more and be happier, be stronger. That's something. I have some conclusion of what I learned from Nigerian.
Before you start the conclusion, let me ask you a wild card question. We recently had during the Super Bowl a very senior Nigerian banker come to the United States and have a helicopter accident under very strange circumstances, killing him and members of his family. Is that possibly connected to any of this?
I don't know. I don't follow American football, but it's possible. But if this guy is in the United States flying a helicopter, he's not the richest in Nigeria, because Tinubu is the richest in Africa. Mm-hmm. Of course, they have not that many rich people as in the United States. But I think if Tinubu or MFLA would be in the line of this contest, the richest people in the United States by Forbes, he would be on one of the top.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that I don't know if you heard about this book by David Webb, the Great Taking.
So I've covered that a fair amount.
Yeah. So this David Rogers Webb in this Great Taking. Describes how they try to each level of civilization has its own taking. I translated Great Taking. I published Great Taking in Poland 3 weeks ago, and the Polish title is Great Confiscation, because taking is a confiscation. So each country. Each society has its own form or type of confiscation. So Webb describes how the ownership and possession of securities has been replaced by a new legal concept of security entitlements, which is overriding contractual claim provided to selected banking institution and denied to all others. All securities, not only in the United States, because now in the European Union, most of countries already adapted this legal.
So I have to tell you, there's much about David's analysis I disagree with. So, and we've covered that plenty, but I will say this, America and every country in the world has been the victim of taking after taking after taking. And David did a great job of describing the taking during the Depression and how that taking worked. And what you're describing in Nigeria is a great taking.
It was a great, but it's a different style, different right. kind of taking. I think what David Webb wrote, he wrote about this line by Klaus Schwab. You don't own and you won't own right. anything and be happy. Right. And his Webb is showing how we won't have anything.
Right, but here's the thing: David's talking about securities, and securities
not only because securities, all securities. That's what I thought, but when I translated this book, I discovered there is a several layers of understanding, because first of all, securities are everywhere, because even if you don't own your own stocks or bond, you go to bank and you deposit your savings.
Right, and they own stocks and bonds. Or they
but
own
they,
bonds.
They own stocks.
Right, yes, but here's stocks. The thing. If you look at the security system has been useful and is still useful in centralizing control. If you look at what's going on in the United States right now, the goal of the taking is to get the real assets, because there's far more securities than there are collateral. And so right now, the big war is to get control of the real assets, not the securities. So I'm not saying that the securities aren't at risk, but ultimately, if you look, they're not going to take the securities until they get enough of the real assets. And that's because to engineer this, to engineer yourself to total control, you need to control the land and the food and the guns and the real assets.
So, I agree with you 100%. Right. But this entitlement, this is a real thing. Because
yes,
if you buy a house and you give them a hypothec, you give a mortgage to the bank, but this mortgage is not a mortgage, it's not a piece of paper, it's your home. You are taking paper from the bank, and you give them back in case of deficiency. You are paying, giving back your home. The same with the refrigerator, with everything. Because if even in this system, in this layers of credit, credit layers or entitlements, they are also collateralized by with the refrigerator, with the motorcycles,
and the terrible danger is if our currency liquidity is shut off the way it was in Nigeria, but we still have our mortgages and our auto loans, we're going to be in a debt trap, and that's what we have to avoid.
Yes. No, in Nigeria they don't have it, but they have a different. They have a different pluses, different minuses. But Nigeria revealed the deep state and Davos and all this stuff. They don't understand what they are doing, even with the CBDC. They don't know how to carry out the process.
Right.
They don't know what is the purpose to carry out the process. I think that those people, the same it's the same conclusion I got from David Webb's book, that those takers, they don't actually know what is the purpose to carry out this taking.
I would say, you know, they don't have a perfect design of how to do the takings, but they also don't care how many people they kill or destroy in the process. And as long as they can maintain control, you know, they can kill, maim, and take. So
they don't have a philosophy, and they don't have a good economics, good economic theory that would run this process.
Exactly.
I think that they are all of them, all those globalists, all those deep state people, they are dominated by the false Keynesian economics. They are convinced that the introduction of CBDC and the abolishing of cash contributes to economic progress.
So here's where the first time I really disagree with you, Jan. I think to attribute to them any commitment to a philosophy or idealism is to give them way more respect than they deserve. So if I have a parasite, so one of the common parasites in America is, I refer to it as a tapeworm. A tapeworm just takes. It doesn't have a philosophy. It doesn't have an ideology. It just takes. And I literally think that we are dealing, and I attribute James Kunstler, who just wrote an article. He said, America used to be a divide between progressives and conservatives, or between Republicans or Democrats. Now we just have a divide between the sane and the insane.
No difference, yes.
So I think these people are insane. I think you're looking at an insane a culture. You know, I used to say crime that pays is crime that saves. They have gotten away with it again and again and again. And now it is turned into a form of insanity.
I know, but of course, but this is a result. This is not a cause. This is a result of not having a correct ethics,
right.
moral drive, philosophy, and economics. How smart guy, I don't want to mention names, but plenty of those billionaires, American billionaires, not only American, the German, the same. They trust in the stupid theories. They believe in, how could they live in the system where the money is arbitrarily changed every day by anyone who is stronger than?
I don't think they believe in those theories. I think they just need spin and air cover for their takings. In other words, that, you know, and again, I'll attribute this to Cudgel. He said, you know, climate change is just a cudgel you use to hit us over the head and kill us and steal our stuff. You know, I think they don't believe in it. I think they use it. It's a marketing device.
Yes, maybe. But look, if in Poland we had a government changed 3 months ago, from the bad one to the better. Now it's better. but it's no difference. But those bad people, they were stealing money. The first bet, they were stealing money. They were corrupted like no government so far after changing the system from communism to market economy. But they are that stupid. They stole money and they keep cash. I know some of them, and they say, Jesus Christ, why didn't I buy a gold? Because he heard the conversation among other people. Happy that the gold is $2,300, but they bought when it was $1,300. But those stupid thieves, they did not know that the stealing paper money is nothing. I know one guy owns for the equivalent of $20 million, but owns in an old Polish currency, which is completely out of it's worthless, because he amassed his total wealth he amassed in a currency, in a paper currency, but this currency has been abolished 4 years ago and he still have it. He showed me, he has like, you know, 20 suitcases, 20 large suitcases of the money. I said, why do you keep it? They said, maybe sometime in the future, like in Zimbabwe, when you go to Zimbabwe, you can buy this $100 trillion dollars or quadrillion Zimbabwe dollars. And now they make money because now that money, that notes are worth something. So I agree with you that they are stealing, they are stupid, they are insane. But at least they should. I cannot understand why United States smart people, they live how many years? 53 years after abolition of gold standard, they didn't do anything. They deform, degenerate economies, dead base money, and fractional reserve banking. It is good for if you are stealing, if you are close to that money, but afterward, maybe 5 years from now or 10 years from now, this stolen money will be worth nothing, because I believe in we come back to gold, money, and to Bitcoin.
Right, but I'm going to be a tough guy here. There's an effort to get the states to buy and create systems with gold and silver. And I think that's a terrific idea. But if that's all you do, the central bankers have plenty of gold and they will put everybody in a short squeeze, throw them in a debt trap and grab all their land. So the notion that somehow we can convert to gold and silver, you know, we're going to need currency to transact and we're going to need currency liquidity. Otherwise, the same thing will happen here that happened in Nigeria. So I just want to make sure we keep gold in perspective, because the citizens have very little gold and the central banks have a ton of it. And the last thing I want is the central bankers to be able to put us in a short squeeze. So, and I think they'd love to do that. So
I
the question. You go ahead.
No, I like to say, because I talk to some American or Western people and I told them about Nigeria, and they said, Danes or Italian or even Bulgarian could not stay, could not wait 3.5 months until something happens. They would do anything. I said, and I disagree with him, because I think that if something like this happened in Italy or even Germany, probably within 3.5 months would die more people than in Nigeria. Would be more.
Absolutely. More. They're much more dependent on the system. Much
absolutely,
more.
Yes, because right. They don't have this hatred to the state. They right. They don't accept the state. But the G7, they don't understand what is self-reliance. They right. don't understand what is to be self-made man, and maybe 50, 60 years ago in the United States, but now everything is it's government run.
Right, and if you look at all the push to control the food supply and to increase dependency, you know, in the pandemic, great effort to shut down small business and independent income. So, and to shut down cash. So all the push is to make the population much more dependent on the system than it was even 3 years ago.
Yes, I agree, because my next book, the next book that we published, is titled Fiat Food. Fiat Food.
Wonderful.
Yes, and it's made by my American, the American book.
Is it going to be available in English?
Matthew, yeah, I translate from English to no, yeah. I translate. Somebody translated. I just edited. And okay. It's a fantastic book about this, because subtitle is how the government destroy. Because there is a book like by Murray Rothbard, what has government done to our money? So it's what has government done to our. The Polish title is what has government done to our food, and right. This book is about corrupting the food production and even food diet and the health of
now people. did you write this, or are you publishing it?
No, I could not write it, because it's you have to be a specialist in this field and
who's the author?
It was written by American guy. His name is Matthew Lysiak, Lysiak, and this book is available. And the co-author is Saifedean Amos, the one who wrote this Bitcoin Standard, very famous book on Bitcoin. And uh-huh. they are trying to create the stream of mentality to change the stream of mentality of people, instead of listening to what the government is telling them. And next book, which we're going to publish, is the book made by American farmer. The title is Everything What I Do Is Illegal.
Joe Salatin, we just interviewed him
Salatin.
Today.
You know him, Joe
Salatin. Yeah. We have a wonderful conference.
I'm going to publish Joe's book. It will be probably in early June it will be.
Oh, wonderful. It's one of my favorite books.
Yes, because yeah. these books are, this is real rebel against this fascist managing of everything by state.
So, Jan, we just published at Soleri a book called Pharma Food on synthetic food by a Dutch journalist, Elsa van Hamelen. And we're just about to publish in hard copy. We've done it in digital copy, a big study on Dutch farmers and fishermen. So I'm going to ask you to just email me your mailing address, because I want to send you copies of them.
Absolutely, yes. And I'm gonna publish it, because this is new economics. This is yes. new economics. It's applied economics, applied towards or against those enemies, the people who try to destroy right. us. But we right. are not going to do this. The same with the David Webb. In his last chapter, last uh-huh. paragraph, he wrote, by this entitlement, legal entitlement hierarchy, we can find those people. We can meet those people. The same right. what happens now in Poland and in Europe. We have a lot of riots made by farmers, and these farmers are not going. They started without taking this manure in front of the prime minister's office. Now they don't do it, anymore. They go to the prime minister's house. They find the house, his address, and they put manure in front of his house. Right. They change the strategy.
Accountability. So, yes. Accountability. Absolutely.
Thousands of farmers are marching in downtown Warsaw today to protest EU agricultural policies and the import of cheap food from Ukraine. Those in the streets are calling on the Polish government to withdraw from the EU Green Deal, a plan that is meant to fight climate change, but farmers say leaves them seriously out of pocket. Well, reporting now from the streets of Warsaw for us, here's Adrian Salet.
As you can see behind me, they are being very loud, they are being very numerous, as it is estimated that more than 10,000 people from all over Poland have come to the capital city today to march. They've been passing the Polish parliament, now they reached the Polish government, and they are mainly protesting against the massive influx of Ukrainian products onto their domestic market since the beginning of the war and the lifting of custom duties. They started the movements approximately 1 month ago in smaller cities, in rural areas, before reaching bigger cities, before blocking the highways, blocking the crossing points at the Ukrainian border and the German one from this weekend. And today that's the first time they're coming to Warsaw. It is something big for them, but it's also important that they were to add that they were joined by their colleagues, hunters, their colleagues, miners, who are all angry at the European Green Deal, which is, according to them, not compatible with their activity. And they claim that they see this Green Deal as a threat to the future of their professions.
So I think that people are reading, more people are reading, thinking, but it's still too many. We have still too many those idiots trusting them.
So, Jan, I have to tell you, this has been a fascinating conversation. I cannot tell you how much I have been trying to find accurate information on what happened in Nigeria, and having somebody dig it out and bring it forward is invaluable. So I don't know if you're going to be doing more of the sort of, I'll call it a case study, but I would hope that you would stay in touch. I'm going to send you Pharma Food and Dutch Farmers and Fishermen who have our permission to translate them into Polish. If you would like, we would love it. And if there's, you know, anytime you want to get on the Salieri Report and bring forward another example of what's been happening, I would love it.
I would like to finish our conversation by saying that it would be worthwhile to press the authorities of World Economic Forum, European Union, Bank of Settlement, International Settlements, et cetera, for Nigeria to complete the CBDC. If they complete CBDC, also known as a digitalization of currency, also known as a cashless society, then we would really know how many, if any, corpses are left in that closet, and finally remove them all. So that's what I think, that the Nigeria made us alerted. So,
right.
And I hope, but I'm very sorry that the news from Nigeria are very, very disturbing and negative. And my friend, he's ready to come back to Europe, but he cannot sell anything that he owns. Nobody's buying. But I'll be following Nigeria, because it's an interesting country, very nice people. What can I say?
So I will close by telling you that recently, just last month, a group of senators voted, I think it was 36 or 37 to 0 in the state of Louisiana, for a resolution that the WHO, the UN, and the WEF would have no standing or jurisdiction within the state of Louisiana. So, and I will tell you, last year I talked to the House representative who had tried to run that bill last year, and she said no one knew what I was talking about. And she said, this year all you have to do is say WEF, and you're going to get a vote against the WEF. And she said, people are waking up. So there's progress.
I hope so. Okay.
Me too.
And Nigeria, help us a bit.
Unfortunately, yes. Yes.
But the wars are dangerous for us. And Ukraine project, Ukraine, Taiwan, all those affairs. But I hope it's gonna be better soon.
Okay. Well, Jan, thank you again for joining us on the Soleri Report.
Thank you very much.
We very much appreciate your work, and please keep us posted.
Yes, thank you very much, and sorry for my I'm very nervous. I was very nervous.
So imagine how nervous I would be if I had to do this in Polish.
Oh, yeah, that's a different song. Okay, I'm gonna practice my language. Thank you very much.
Your language is fine. Anyway, thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Have a wonderful day.
Okay. Likewise. Thank you very much.